Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Mike Costantino sitting across from me.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah. I give you a chance to say good morning this morning.
If you don't give it to me, I take it.
We have with us Paul Lind, professor in the Department of Political Science and International Affairs up at NAU. He's an expert on the Middle East, among other things, and the relationships of the military to the civilian aspects of the regime. We're talking today about Iran and the U.S., Iran and Israel, prospects that there may be an attack on Iran, and what it would mean for Americans and for the rest of the world.
Paul just gave Democrats at the Red Rocks an hour-long speech on this very topic, and it was well-received.
And shortly, Paul, one of the things you talked about for about 45 minutes was the very difficult and conflicting relationship between Iran and the United States. There's bad blood going way back, right?
Yes. The bad blood started back in 1953 when the United States helped to overthrow a declared communist that the British said needed to be overthrown because the British had interests in Iran, specifically with the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. And so the British went to the United States and asked for our assistance.
So having a lot of oil in Iran had nothing to do with them overthrowing the government there?
No, it was more to do with the fact that they thought that he was a communist, and they wanted to remove communist influence from Iran.
So they elected a fellow who was democratically elected, right?
Right. Mossadegh was democratically elected by the Iranian people.
But he nationalized the Anglo-Iranian oil company.
Yeah. Right. And the nationalization was going to take away profits from the British, and this was a threat to their national interests.
Sure.
And so they needed
And
US
this is one of the most famous CIA coups around, right?
Right, exactly.
1953. Kermit Roosevelt, you said in your talk?
Yes. Kermit Roosevelt goes to President Eisenhower. They agree to assist the British, and they organize a coup to overthrow Mossadegh in 53.
So that starts out the bad relations. We help reinstall the Shah, right?
Right. We install the Shah, and then with the Shah back in power, he begins to essentially consolidate control for himself instead of actually reforming the economy and society for the Iranian people. He begins to put power into his office.
And then what happens to the Shah? I think most folks know in 1979.
Right. In 1979, he was overthrown by Ruhollah Khomeini, who had organized protests against the Shah's regime while he was in Iran. But then once he was in exile in Paris, and he was able to get the students as well as the middle class on his side, and was eventually able to work to overthrow the Shah's regime.
So basically the U.S., Michael asked a question here, but basically the U.S. overthrew two, or resisted overthrew one democratically elected official and resisted the democracy movement in Iran that ended up bringing the present Islamic government to power.
Right. Well, it was because they supported the Shah. They provided him billions of dollars in economic and military assistance. And this economic and military assistance, the Shah used for himself instead of benefiting the state of Iran. And so this agitated the middle class, the clerics, as well as the youth. And the clerics, led by Khomeini, used this to agitate against the Shah's regime and ultimately force him from power.
Well, many of us like the history. We want to get to the good stuff. And the good stuff, you know, Netanyahu was in Washington the other day. But before we do that, talk a little bit, because I found it really interesting during your talk. The organization of the Iranian government. You know, we don't know a lot about it, and I was enlightened by your, by what you said.
Okay. Well, the Iran in 1979, Khamenei became the Grand Ayatollah, and he set up a Council of Guardians, which is an organization made up of religious clerics who oversee politics within Iran. He also, in addition to establishing the Council of Guardians, they established democratic institutions, a parliament, a judiciary, but the key to the Iranian rule in the Islamic Republic of Iran is that the clerics are considered the guardians of politics in
Iran.
So
they have these democratic institutions which are trumped or overruled
yeah.
by the, what'd you call them?
The Council of Guardians, and the Grand Ayatollah is overseeing all of it. He's the ultimate arbiter of politics within the country.
But in reality, all these forces do have interplay. In other words, as dominant as that council may be, they're not, because there's the military, and then there is some influence by the civilian government.
Right, exactly. And as a result of the various influences within the country, youth movements, communism, capitalism, democracy, you have a variety of different interests that have grown in the country since 1979. So while the religious clerics are overseeing the politics, you have various factions that have developed within the political structure.
How does this play into Iran's nuclear ambition, and what are they exactly? I mean, why is Iran interested in developing nuclear power and possibly the ability to make nuclear weapons?
Well, Iran has ultimately seen itself as a regional hegemon. You know, it's a large power in the region, and it feels that it has a rightful place to be there because of many years of dynasty and its role in the greater Middle Eastern society.
Persian society.
Persian society. But this influence that they feel that they have has always been countered by Arabs and Arab nationalism. And so in the 1980s, after the Islamic Republic of Iran came to power, the United States was already a dominant influence in politics in the region and had supported a number of Arab dictators. And so the support and the development of nuclear energy was done to ensure that Iran could maintain its power within the region to challenge the interests.
So you see the development as mostly defensive. I mean, it's shocking, folks, but Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and they were easily overrun. And Libya gave up their nuclear program, and they were overrun. So there is a bit of rationality to thinking that if you have nuclear weapons, that gives you a deterrent. On the other hand, it's apparently the most provocative thing they could possibly do.
Right. You're exactly right. Iran essentially acquires this nuclear energy capability because it wants to be a regional hegemon by establishing prestige of having these weapons. Security, because the United States has forces that were in Iraq on its western border and in Afghanistan on its eastern border after 2001 and the September 11th attacks and the 2003 invasion by the U.S. into Iraq. So the Iranian government in particular is led by Ahmadinejad and the Ayatollah, who are a conservative faction within the government. And they have consistently said that they are threatened by U.S. interference in politics in the region, the entire Middle East, but also by Israel as well, and have always called for the extinction of the state of Israel.
And Israel has nuclear weapons, lots right. of nuclear weapons. It has nuclear submarines. There's no possibility that Iran could have a first strike that would take out the Israeli nuclear capability, right?
No, not at all. Iran right now has said that it is not seeking a nuclear weapon. Right now, it's a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which means that it's opened itself up for inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency. It's the experts in the Israeli intelligence and American intelligence, from what I've seen, have said that it would be at least a year, potentially 2 to 3 years from now, if Iran made that decision to go into a nuclear weapons program.
And that's the discussion that perhaps Obama and Netanyahu had last week was, you know, we don't have to do this right away. And I want to get this question in, and for obvious reasons. Obama has been much better at getting international support, multilateral support for his foreign policy than George Bush could ever thought of having that kind of support. So would there be, is there a possibility of a multinational boots on the ground attack if it looks like there is, we're backed into a corner, America must go to war with Iran to destroy a perceived nuclear capability? Would the United States not be out front?
I don't really see the United States as being directly out in front. What I see right now with the Obama administration is that we want to play the diplomatic game, you know, and I don't mean game in the sense, you know, in kids' terms, but what I mean is, for the sake of diplomacy, what the United States wants to do is it wants to reassure Israel, because of our relationship with Israel,
right,
that, you know, we have their back. You know, President Obama has said we'll keep all options on the table.
Yep.
But I don't see us offensively going to war with Iran.
So let me ask you this. Israel decides on a preemptive strike on Iranian nuclear facilities where they're either building the bomb or they're not building the bomb. And as you said, most intelligence agencies said they've not started building, tried to build nuclear weapons. Give us a scenario. What happens? Israel attacks Iran. What happens next?
Okay. If Israel attacks Iran, what happens is you have continued funneling of economic and military support to Hezbollah, which is one of their proxies in Lebanon. And Hezbollah would then attack Israel from the north. There would also be money and potential military equipment sent to, like, bombs, or missiles sent to Hamas in the Gaza Strip, where they could continue to launch attacks in the southern part of Israel, destabilizing Israel and forcing an Israeli attack in response to this aggression from Iran in response to their attack by Israel.
What about American forces in Afghanistan? If Israel attacks Iran, what's Iran going to do about American forces in Afghanistan? But also, Paul, what about Iraq, which has a huge Shia population?
Well, you would see the military assistance continue to the Shia in the south of Iraq, and there would be a potential terrorist attacks against U.S. interests, both in the Middle East, in Bahrain and Qatar, but also potentially in Afghanistan as well. And they're going to try, and if there's evidence of United States involvement in assisting Israel in their attack, if that were to happen, Iran would try and respond to and attack U.S. interests.
Around the coffee shop, there was bets that the term bunker buster,
right,
came up during the Netanyahu Obama meeting. Is Israel simply after our bunker buster bombs?
We would never give them those particular bombs. The United States military would be the ones to use those bombs.
I see. So that would guarantee American involvement.
So if Israel attacks Iran, how long is this struggle, this Cold War becoming hot war, going to go on? I mean, we attack Iran, kill a bunch of their people, or Israel does, they blame us. You've got 1 minute to answer this question.
We are going to have Paul back on, right?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so the less than 1 minute answer would be that you have a war that could continue conceivably for 6 months. You know, as you begin to draw in other international actors like a China or a Russia to try and help an Iran that's being attacked by Israel and the U.S.
And Iranians have a long memory, right?
Yes, Iranians do have.
Who does bad things to Iran?
Right, they do have a long memory, but I guarantee you that's why diplomacy is the first strategy, because both Israel and the United States do not want a military option. The military option has to be an option of last resort.
I see. Well, that's I don't want to use the term, but world war is
not a good thing. Next week, folks, we have continue our series on the war on women. We have Jo Kelleher, brilliant woman, run for office, and we hope she'll run again. But we'll be talking to her about the war on women.
VBID.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.